Matt, the stock market might not perform that well in the near future, man. It might not be that good.
Wait, what? Hey, Financial Life Planning, Matt Robeson with Mike Morton, our all-around guru on life and finance. Wait, Mike, hold on. Is it time to panic? It's like the Simpsons episode. It's like, should we all crack each other's skulls open and feast on the goo inside? Did that get too dark at the beginning of the episode?
No, man. No panic. Remember, as long as you have a plan, no one panics. Remember?
Right, the Joker fund. I love that Joker episode. People should really go back. But I mean, this is serious stuff. I think what we're talking about today is, look, at any time, the stock market might not do that well. It's, you know, it's a random walk down Wall Street, right? It might do well tomorrow. But we exchanged an article offline that said, actually, there is a big wig Yale professor who says it might do really not well for like the next 10 years. That strikes me as a big deal.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So Robert Shiller, Nobel winner, discovered something really important about stock market returns. And he did this work 20 plus years ago. But what he found was, yeah, it's not only a random walk. We can look at long-term historical returns, and that's one way of looking at the market. But he broke it down and found ways of predicting the next 10 years return based on the current valuations. So depending on how high the stock market was, depending on how you measure it today, has a predictive nature to the next 10 years return. And that got him a Nobel Prize. And it's really fascinating research.
Not to sound flip, but the Nobel gave him, he got a Nobel Prize for saying, hey, if you look at how things are doing now, it might tell you something about how it might do in the future.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I don't know whether to feel inspired or depressed by that, man.
That's right.
But wait, okay, I am being flip. I'm being flip. Let's slow that down, because once upon a time, I was an econ major. You and I studied economics together at the same college. But we are gonna have to break that down. So what he's saying is you can look at valuation. What does that mean?
Okay. So it's the value, the cost of the stock market. And there's lots of different ways of defining it. So this is now called the Shiller PE ratio. So PE
ratio.
PE, price to earnings. P&E, price to earnings. So you take the price, the current, like how much does it cost to buy the stock market? You know, if you buy the S&P 500, how much does it cost? That's the current price. And then the earnings is the earnings of all those companies. All right, now forward looking, backward looking, I'm not going to get into the details, but it's how much they earn as a company. All right, how much their profits, think of it as like profits. So the price you pay for the profits you get. Now his insight, so that's just a ratio, that's a number, you can measure it. The price of the S&P 500, the price of the US stock market, divided by the earnings, all the companies release the earnings, so it's just numbers. So you can divide this, you can find this. Now, his insight was that didn't lead to too much, you know, if you just take the PE and look at the, you know, forward looking 1 year, 5 year, 10 years, you know, you can slice and dice all this data. You know, I told you the researchers are always doing this all the time. Hey, like, wouldn't it be great if we could actually predict the stock market, right? And so they're doing all this research. So you take the PE ratio, and then what he did was take a 10-year view, because you have these business cycles. So it's called the 10-year Shiller PE ratio, is usually a 10-year average. And that, looking forwards, has some predictive nature to the next 10-year return.
So you can look at how an individual company's price, the way, where it's trading, compares to how much money it's making.
That's right.
And you can also do that across all the companies that are trading. And that's not the big insight. What he found out is if you do that and you look 10 years ahead across the whole market, where you are today can help you predict accurately where you'll be in 10 years.
Yeah, that's right. He broke it up by, then you break it up by quartiles, or he did 10 deciles. Okay. So every 10%, depending on where you are, and then looking forward. So it's exactly right, Matt. We don't want to get into the math. I think we've had enough, but the bottom line is this. Depending on that PE ratio today does have some correlation with the following 10-year return. So the next 10 years, what you might get in terms of stock market return.
So that's the jumping off point then for this article that we traded back and forth, in which this guy, Robert Shiller, says, hey, I know everyone's super excited about the market setting record highs, but
Yeah, that's exactly right. When it's setting those record highs, you've just had some great returns, right? So you can think of it this way. You just had some really good returns. Your portfolio's looking great. So maybe the next, you know, future won't be as great to get back to those historic. If the historical is 10% and you just had a 20% rise, you know, to get back to that historical 10%, the next years might not be as good as what you've just experienced.
And inflation comes in here somewhere?
Inflation is always in here. So, you know, the buying power.
But we've had very high inflation by historic terms.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it affects, but the inflation can affect, Matt, both the price and the earnings, right? So, you know, you get this run up and that's the price, but the earnings, inflation affects the earnings too. And so you can really get the run up in the denominator. So what people might be wondering is, okay, you've been talking about this price and earnings and, you know, we've had this run up recently. Where are we today? All right. And so we'll include a graph in the show notes here, but I'm looking at it and we are approaching one of the highest points, you know, of this Shiller PE ratio. Right now it's around 30 something.
The whole market.
This is looking at the entire market. So that's what we're evaluating. Matt, you're right. You could do this for individual companies. This is very classic for how do you discover, you know, a good company. Should I buy this company or not? You're looking at how much does it cost? How much profit do they make? Right?
Right. It's like if you went to an antique shop and you're like, am I getting a deal on this or not?
That's right. Yeah. What am I paying for this? How much is it worth?
What's right? it worth?
Right. Exactly. Right. So that's exactly what price and
the answer
are.
At every antique shop is basically nothing.
Well, since the advance of eBay, right? And everybody's doing this now, it's really hard to find things. But hey, my wife still finds stuff. She'll find, I think the most recent was for a few bucks and she sold it for like $100.
Whoa. All right.
They're still out there. Corrected. It's still out
maybe,
there.
But. Maybe the experts at Antiques Roadshow will discover that I'm in fact wrong. All right. So, but what you were saying is that the whole market right now, we've had a run up. That means the price of the whole market is high.
That's correct. The price is high and earnings have been good too. So earnings have been good, but the price has definitely run up. So we're somewhere in the top 10% of all time of this PE, the Shiller PE ratio. Oh. So if you look at the last 100 years, we're currently in the top 10%. You know, we're hitting that sort of that all-time high as well. And so when it's hitting an all-time high, that means the future returns, again, there's a relationship between where are we with the Shiller PE ratio to what the future 10-year return is going to be. When we're hitting that all-time high with the PE ratio, the future 10 years is hitting a low.
Got it. That makes sense. Things are going to have to come back to earth at some point, because when the PE ratio gets really, really high, you're paying a premium essentially for the value you're getting. That can't go on forever.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you got it.
So, all right, that establishes then the why of your opening there of, hey, things may not be that good for the next 10 years. It then leads to the question that I Simpson quoted and got very dark about, which is, all right, time to panic. I mean, would this be a time to say, all right, well, the stock market is probably, in all likelihood, unless it bucks every historical trend, not going to do that well over the next 10 years. Should I be more in bonds? Should I go into REITs? Should I hoard gold? Should I start a compound somewhere?
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, you know, first, what could you possibly do? We want to explore that.
I like my compound idea.
Yeah. But remember too, that this is 10 years. So like if you say, geez, is it time to panic? Should I pull out? You know, should I pull back and get rid of some of my investments and just go safe? Well, the next 1 year could be great and you would miss out on that. Or the next 1 year could be terrible. We're talking about a 10-year period. So what have you done in the last 10 years, you know, versus the next 10 years? What are your actual choices when it comes to your funds? So we'll get to that in a minute. I wanted to also highlight before we answer that question, what do I actually do? What does the next 10-year return possibly look like based on where we are today? And the next 10-year return might be, you know, closer to 1 to 4%, you know, 1 to 5% over the next 10 years. Now, we had this from 2000 to 2010. Remember the law? It was like the lost decade, right? We had two crashes over 2000 to 2010 was like a 1% return. That whole, if you take that whole time period, but in there, there were massive gains and massive losses. All right. So if you say like, geez, I'm going to be really defensive, I'm going to pull out of the market, you might have missed a great couple year period from like 2003 and four, where it was like shooting up and you would have missed out on that, you know? So even though the 10-year period might only be a 1 or 2% return, you have no idea like when that's coming. But that's what the charts say that, again, we'll include in the show notes. When we're at this high, the historically high PE, the next 10-year return has averaged between minus 6% to 6%.
I see. So I see why you wanted to go through, well, what's the range here? Because the answer of what are your options and which one should you choose depends on, well, compared to what, right? So that's the what is stock market 1%, maybe 4 or 5% could be negative. It sounds like what we're predicting here because of this Nobel laureate is it's not so hot, somewhere in that very tepid range.
That's correct. Looks not so hot for the next decade, but we have no idea when, what, or where. I mean, again, it's easy for us to spit out 10 years. Oh my gosh, here's where we are. What should I do for 10 years? Like, again, 10 years. Where were you 10 years ago? And what has happened in that time? I mean, it's a long time.
Where was I 10 years ago? I don't know. I was probably strung out on something that I can't even remember.
Yeah.
All right. Now my question.
Yeah.
So we have this piece of information. We know what to compare it to, right? What do we do? I mean, compound?
Yeah. Yeah. Compound, man. Keep, you know, the only thing you can do is to keep a well-diversified portfolio. That you can't pull out. Now you can be more defensive. That's my first recommendation. Like this is not a time to go all in. All right. Now there's individual stuff. You had this great idea. You're part of a startup company. You know, there's all kinds of stuff. Like go for it, you know, make stuff happen. That's fantastic. But in general with your 401k funds or, you know, your retirement funds, it's not a time to be aggressive. This is not a time that's like, hey, I'm going to really put more of this safe money to work. You know, I wouldn't do that. So keep your well-diversified portfolio. We've talked all, you know, many shows about what that is. And also be a little defensive. Okay. So it's not a time to be aggressive with that portfolio. If you're normally 80% stocks, 20% bonds, you're in that target date fund, stick with what you're in. Keep adding to your 401k, stick with what you're in. If you want to get a little defensive, you could take some little bit of money off the table instead of 80%. Go 75% stocks. It might help you sleep better at night after listening to this episode. It's not going to drastically change your financial future. So that's the way to think about it. My first recommendation, well-diversified portfolio, stick with the plan, be a little bit defensive minded, not a time to go all in or push the chips in or be aggressive.
So that's your answer for right now, based on what the market's doing and what the overall PE ratio is. Now, it reminds me a little bit of the Warren Buffett advice, be fearful when others are greedy, be greedy when others are fearful. It sounds a lot like what you're saying is right now, people are apt to be kind of greedy because the stock market's going up and it means, hey, you know, hold your horses because something is probably going to correct. Something is probably going to come down. When do you update this view? Is it next year? Is there a whole new 10-year view a year from now?
Yeah, it really depends on that PE ratio in the stock market. Okay, so this is how I often think about portfolios. 90% of the time, you're in your regular portfolio. I'm in this target date fund. It's 80% stocks. Great. 90% of the time, that's what you're doing. You're just adding to that in your 401k savings and you're not mucking with it. You're not messing around with it. When do we change? when we're hitting these all-time highs, we're close. I don't think it's a bubble. I don't think it's crazy. I'm happy. I think we're in that 90%. Stick with the plan. It's fantastic. All right. When do we update it? If things really start going really high, you could. I usually on the high side, I usually don't recommend changing things because you never know when you're hitting that all-time high. Mm. But it is a good time to take some money off the table. I mean, take a little bit here and there, especially if you're in individual stocks, you know, like Nvidia has gone up, or you're in Amazon or Microsoft and they've really done well, 50% rise in the last 12 months. Hey, take 10 or 20 grand off, you know, put it in a well-diversified portfolio, take a little bit of those earnings, you know, and something's really shot up. Now, on the other side, though, Matt, I will say this. When do we reevaluate? It's when the stock market crashes by 20, 30, 40%, but starting at the 20%. If you're down off the high,
that's when it's time to be greedy because others are fearful.
That's when it's time to be greedy. So this is back in the pandemic, right? Let me give you an example, very recent example. Pandemic, stock market crashed by more than 20% over just a couple of months. I mean, it was fast. And if you look back at the charts, go ahead and pull them up after this episode. That's the time you should have bought. All right. It went down by more than 20%. You should have sucked and no one was buying. I mean, I remember what it felt like during that time. And we've had stories about that. But when that's, you know, that's how I think about portfolios is when the stock market's hitting all-time highs. Yeah. Think about being defensive or just stick with the plan. When it's down by 20%, that's a good rule of thumb. That's like, ooh, it's off by 20%. Go ahead and get like further into the stock market. Go ahead and buy.
That's a good lead in because that's kind of good general advice. That's a good lead into what I think is sort of my last question on this, which is how much does your investing time horizon factor into that last answer you gave? Because it feels to me like what we're talking about here with this whole Shiller PE 10-year view is we can predict something with some likelihood about the next 10 years. But if I were magically 30 instead of 50 and my time horizon were like 35 years, then I might play back to you something you've said on this show many times. And I might just say, hey, Shiller, stuff it. I don't care about the next 10 years because history tells me that I'm in this for 35 years. I'm in this for 40 years and I'm going to stay aggressive. Because the 10-year view doesn't matter to me. Whereas I'm 50 now, my retirement window is outside the 10 years, but maybe I'm just a scotch more defensive. How does that sound to you?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I always look at it this way with actual dollars and timelines. So in your 30s, you know, if you're a 30-year-old and you're like, I don't care about 10 years, you know, these dollars are for 20, 30, 40 years. There's an argument, a really great argument, just be 100% stocks and just keep adding. I mean, don't even worry about it. You don't want to miss the run-ups, okay? And again, 10 years, you have no idea where those run-ups are going to be. So just keep doing your thing, all right? And that's the general advice I gave as well. Stick with your target date fund. Just keep adding money to that. Now, when you're getting closer to retirement, when you're getting closer to when you might spend the money, that's when you got to dial in. I'm going to spend 50 grand next year. I'm going to spend 100 grand of this in 3 years when I retire. I'm retiring in 3 years. I need $100,000 a year. Well, now you got to get really specific. And that $100,000 you need in 3 years, you need to know it's going to be there. So no, you're not going to put that in the stock market. And so you can generalize it to these target date funds. Hey, I think I'm about 10 years from retirement. Let me be in an 80-20, you know, that target date fund. That's great. Just stick with that plan. You're going to have some cash and bonds and stuff in there. If you want, I do a lot of work with my clients where we get more specific. Hey, I'm retiring in 5 years. I have these plans. It's going to cost this amount. I've got this portfolio. So now we're slicing, like I need 75 grand for 3 years. I need 100 grand for 4 years. So that's in these cash, these bonds, you know, and you get very targeted with where that money is exactly.
Got it. So this moment we're in, this Shiller prediction matters to you more depending on your time horizon, if you've got a shorter horizon toward retirement or spending or some kind of, you know, benchmark up ahead. If you're in this for decades to come, don't worry about it. But I don't want people to just go ahead and dispense with this episode because we're about to get to a new segment that I'm really excited about. I think it's fun. And we kind of brainstormed the name together. We both adopted it in different ways. It's one thing. And the idea here is we're going to point out one thing that we noticed, that made us think, that made us see things differently, that made us laugh, that we think is interesting enough to bring to all the audience. And Mike, you're up first.
Okay, man. All right. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about this. So mine today is that specificity matters. And it actually ties back to this episode really well. Depending on what you're training for or focusing on, what you do matters to that thing. All right. So let me give you an example how I came across this and how it applies to what I'm currently working on. I am training for an ultra marathon. I've done these before. I'm training for going to 50 or 60 miles all at once. One in the morning, I'm going to get up and run with a bunch of other people 50 or 60 miles in a row. It will take me a long time, probably about 18 hours. And so I'm training for this now. And I listened to an episode by Peter Attia, a podcast. We'll link it to it, about HIIT training. Okay, high intensity interval training. And he broke down all the different, you know, benefits and things like that. And the point is, when it comes to training for exercise, the specificity matters. Like, what you're training for matters. Okay. So if you're training for sprints, you do sprints, right? That makes sense. And when I'm training for ultra marathon, I do need to bring up my cardiovascular. I have to do the long distance stuff. But when it comes to HIIT training, the recommendation, the upshot is, you know, doing 2 to 5 minute intervals instead of 20 to 30 second interval, 10 to 20 second intervals. So you might be, you know, knowing about Tabata, you know, interval training where you're doing these like fast, you know, 10 seconds on, 10 seconds off, or 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off, these interval training. And there's other protocols where it's like 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off, you know? And so obviously you're not going as hard, you're doing for a full 3 minutes. And he gave all the data and it was really interesting. But at the end of the day, it was, they're all going to do great benefits for your health. But for me specifically, it was the specificity of like going longer intervals. So I need to train longer, 3, 4, 5 minute intervals with a good break in between. And that will really help me in my ultra, you know, versus if I was going shorter distance. So ultimately, it's the specificity that really matters.
Yeah, that does tie to this episode, because we're in an age of so much information available online and so much of it is generic. And there are a lot of self-appointed gurus who have some level of expertise, but it may not apply to your specific situation. And so you and I can exchange this New York Times article that says, ooh, next 10 years may not go that well. Well, what's your situation, right? And yeah, what's your time horizon? What's your circumstance? Do you have upcoming expenses? Makes a lot of sense.
And the other thing about it was really applying it to your goals. Like, what are your goals? What is it you want to get better at doing? And don't just listen to the advice. Yeah, of course, interval training is great for your health. And if you're just looking to be healthy and you enjoy, you know, doing Tabatas, you enjoy longer, like, do whatever makes sense. They're all great for your health. But if you're interested in specific goals, whether it's professional career goals, family goals, health goals, the specificity of what you train and how you train matters to reaching those goals.
Well, for example, you're training for an ultramarathon. I'm preparing for my third knee surgery. So, you know, different
That's
goals.
Right. That's
different
right. goals. All right. All right, Matt, all what's right. your one thing?
Mine is going to strike listeners as weird. Like, why the heck are you bringing this up? I promise it comes back around. I read an article in the Times by Nate Cohn, the polling director, and it's called How All in the Family, the old TV show, Archie Bunker, racist old guy, How All in the Family explains Biden's strength among seniors. And his point is, look, we're used to thinking of senior citizens as more conservative, more Republican. It's usually a given that Republicans win voters 65 and over, but that's not what's happening right now. What's happening right now is that Joe Biden is doing better among seniors. Democrats are doing better among seniors. Well, why is that happening? And again, this is, I promise it's going to come around the bend here. Well, Cohn explains something really interesting, which is the following people are going to be seniors this year. Madonna, Magic Johnson, Mark Cuban, Flavor Flav. And so if you think about generations, what's really happening here is the greatest generation, born 1901 to 1927, they've mostly, sadly, passed away. The silent generation, born 1928 to 1945, you know, think they grew up, they're like 1950s Leave It to Beaver types. Very conservative. They're also getting pretty long in the tooth. Today's senior citizens are not yesterday's senior citizens. All right, so why am I telling you this? Why did this stand out to me? Well, I think there are two reasons. One is, it's just interesting to me to think that society's views change overall, but maybe it's not that people's views are changing. Maybe it's that it's who's in the society that's changing, that we're seeing generations turn over. And in fact, there's a whole book about this, The Fourth Turning, that I think you and I were required to read by a friend of ours who's a maniac, you know, which is tries to predict history, kind of like the Schiller thing in like these cycles of history that are cycles of generations. All right. So that's one takeaway. The second thing that it really prompted for me is trying to think about what's my own ability to change my mind and hold opinions today that are very different than the opinions I held 20 years ago, 10 years ago. And I'm still thinking about that. I'm not sure if I do that very often and whether it's a good thing. So that's something I'm going to keep pondering.
Well, that's just because, Matt, you're getting older and you're going to be pretty soon that senior citizen. And we all know that you get stuck in your ways when you get old.
I'm already stuck in my ways. I like my ways. Get your hands off my ways, you damn dirty ape.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true. It's just, it is interesting. It is interesting to me to think about the fact that, you know, like we have kids, we're kind of a similar, you know, generation, similar age range. And the way they view the entire world, it's being shaped by events like the pandemic, right? Like this whole pandemic generation is growing up. And much like, you know, the greatest generation that grew up in the Depression, World War II, like these events that we're like manifesting, we who are in power right now around us, they're shaping this generation. And I don't know, the seniors of 50 years from now are going to be, they're going to be weird.
Wait, the seniors of 50 years from now, that's going to be us. It'll be the long gone.
There's a big implicit assumption in that, my friend.
Here's the thing, though, but that's always been the case, right? I mean, every generation is being shaped by the next generation. That's why you have the fourth turning, you know? And it is interesting that how different that's going to be. And I've been thinking about this, too, that I am becoming more grumpy and, like, set in my ways. And I'm like... just it's funny to think about. It's like, oh man, I am just getting to be a little bit more like that and giving up on certain things. And I can see my kids, I can already glimmer like what 30 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, like, no, Liam, this is my son, like, no, Liam, I'm not doing that. Whatever. I just do it this way. This is the way I've always done it. It's fine. And he's looking at me like, why won't you get the implant? I mean, do you know how much better
That's
your life would be?
Literally the example I was thinking of.
It was like
the brain implant.
Yeah. Be like, why won't you do that, Dad? Like, you know how much better you'll be and like how much easier all this stuff will be and you'll be able to. Da, da, da. I'm like, no, I don't want to do it. It's fine. I'm fine the way I am. So, like, right. I could already
I'm
see
I'm trying
that,
to get my mother to listen to podcasts using her phone. And recently she did. She was like, actually, this is pretty good. I kind of like this. But yes, exactly. I can't. And so anyway, the takeaway for me really is that last point, which is I don't need to. I'm happy with my ossification and, you know, my like getting kind of locked into my ways. But I think it's really good in your life to think about, OK, can you be open to things that really matter or ways that the next generations see the world? And maybe just trying to adopt some change, you know, and being with it.
I think that's exactly right. I think we need that. You got to not lose sight of that the world is changing, people are changing, society is changing. I mean, that's the one constant is everything is changing. And so are you. You're changing all the time.
Except for
that. Except for that.
But maybe
no, you are. I mean, it's very fascinating, like what you want in your 30s. Is not what you want in your 50s. It's just not. Like, you're the same person, but what you want to do with your time and energy is totally different. And that's great. And embrace that.
Well, that's a deep question, too, is am I fundamentally the same person? Well, look, it does tie back to life planning, everything you do with your clients. And I'm sure you run into that all the time. I think we'll have to leave people on sort of that hanging note. This is some deep stuff, man. I don't know. Our next one thing is going to have to be really shallow. Like dumb.
Dial it really in. Dumb. Simple.
Okay. All right. For Mike Morton, Matt Robeson, we will see you next time.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for joining us on Financial Life Planning. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to and rate the podcast on Apple iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. It makes a massive difference. If you have a comment or question, please email me, mike@mortonfa.com. Until next time, thanks for tuning in. This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered for investment advice. Opinions expressed are as of the date of recording. Such opinions are subject to change. I cannot guarantee the accuracy or completeness of the data presented here.